What will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
Welcome to Leverage Addicts, the podcast for investors looking to maximize returns through leverage. Join host, seasoned mortgage professional and real estate enthusiast, Blandon Lerm, as we explore property investing strategies.
The longer you hold an asset, the more cash you have trapped, and you're getting a lower return than you would be getting at the start of the purchase. I'm your host, Blandon, and today we're diving into a topic that's crucial for any property investors looking to build passive income from their property portfolio. Many people assume you buy these properties and then you slowly pay off the mortgage and eventually you can have passive income from them. Although it sounds logical, I'm here to tell you more often than not, that's not how it happens and that's probably not the most efficient way to do it. All to end up in a position where it sucks up a lot of their time and money. Yet the light at the end of the tunnel is nowhere to be seen. With interest rate where they are right now, their financial goals of wanting to buy one property every single year is no longer viable and it needs to be thrown out. The reason why is because they don't understand how to play this game properly. There is actually a sequence of steps and numbers you need to pay attention to in order for you to get passive income from a portfolio. Over the 9 years of running Mortgage HQ, I've been very fortunate to talk to thousands of investors. Many of them are different stages in their journey. Some are buying their second investment property. Some have 30 property portfolio. And I've noticed there are three common mistakes or misconceptions I've noticed that even veteran investors make. So today in this video, I'm going to share with you what are the pitfalls that you need to avoid and a high-level solution on how you can approach it to solve them. Now, if any of these mistakes resonate with you, I've also got something in the end to show you where you can deep dive into them a bit more and learn solutions that's going to allow you to accelerate towards your financial goals. Now, the first misconception is the idea of holding your properties forever. This concept here is popularized by one of the most respected investors in the world, Warren Buffett. So you might be thinking, Blandon, who the heck are you to go against the advice on one of the most prophetic investors ever lived? Well, I would start with this one question, and that is, are the games that we are describing the same? In short, maybe it's a similar games, maybe there are some commonality, but there are massive difference in the fundamental of the game and also the rules of the game. Let me explain. The first one is capital gains tax. When Warren Buffett's saying he's holding forever, he's considering the fact that they have to pay capital gains tax on their investments. Whereas in New Zealand, we have this unfair advantage where the bright line test is only 2 years, practically meaning there are no tax obligation after a certain number of years of holding. Because of this, this changes how we should approach the game. So in a game context, you're trying to look at what time during the game you can score the most points. So there are two places because of this bright line test. The first one is assuming you're an investor with a bit of experience and you know how to buy under value, you make the most money from a percentage point of view at the time of buying because you're buying a property that's undervalued by 200,000-300,000, often 20 to 30% below the market value. And so that's why that is the point where you make the most money because you're only putting 20% deposit in. And if you can buy a property that's 20% below value, chances are you're making 100% return on your money. And if you look at the capital gains, it's only going to be around 7% per year. Yes, maybe in some cities you might get slightly higher, some cities you'll get lower, but you're still going to see around that 7, 8% mark in the last 10 years. So if you sold that property within the first year or 18 months, then you probably have to pay tax on that profit that you make on the capital gains, and you've got to pay tax on the value you have generated by buying it below market, and you've got to pay tax on that 20 to 30% gains you've made at the start of the purchase. So that means the second time where you make the most points is when that 2 year bright line test is up and you're able to offload with minimal or no capital gains tax. Now, caveat, I am no tax advisor. So if you were to sell any assets at all, very important to note, you need to go speak to an accountant before making those decisions. Now, the second big difference in the game that we're playing is that in main centers in New Zealand, you would see cash flow not growing as quickly as capital gains. What do I mean by that? If you buy a property in Auckland, say 10 years ago, you might be able to get closer to 10% in, say, for example, South Auckland. But now if you go South Auckland, you'll be lucky to get 5% return, despite interest rate being 7%. So the relative yield has gone down over time because of gentrification. People are willing to pay a higher price to buy those suburbs. So that means the longer you hold an asset, the more cash you have trapped and you're getting a lower return than you would be getting at the start of the purchase. While in business, potentially you might look at a specific return for certain industry. So even if you hold it for a long time, there is still an industry standard for those businesses that you buy. So your relative return on your cash is still going to remain consistent in most cases. Of course, there are exceptions. When you buy a startup that is growing rapidly, cash flow might be significantly lower. Or you might be buying a business that have very high margins, then the cash flow would be much higher in the beginning. So then how do you act on this information? If you don't hold forever, does that mean you sell everything? It comes down to this one concept here, and that is exploring your opportunity cost. By holding on to the property that you have, what other opportunities are you missing? Is there a property out there where you are going to get better cash flow and capital improvement? Because you could potentially let go of an older property where you're now just getting the average market return. You sell it with no tax. Again, caveat, you got to check with your accountant. Then you could buy something that's going to significantly have more returns. That's why it's important to explore your opportunity costs. Now, the second misconception or mistake is that we measure size and not the actual return. Now, if you are familiar with the mortgage lifecycle concept, we talk about stage two and stage three. There is a gap. Stage two and expansion is where we borrow as much as we can from the bank to grow a portfolio that is sustainable. Your focus should just be buying assets that's going to give you good long-term gains without the stress that is going to keep you up at night. Now, when you transition from two to three and you're wanting to build passive income, you need to play the game a bit more diligently. You got to start treating your portfolio like a business, because even when you do a startup, perhaps in the beginning, you're less focused on profits because you're trying to grow as quickly as possible. As long as you're not losing money, then you're probably happy. But at a certain point, you need to start thinking about sustainability long term. How could you build a business that's going to pay you dividends? In the same way, a property portfolio needs to do the same, and that is pay you dividends. So what metrics could you think about? Simply put, return on equity. What is it that you're getting from the equity that is in the portfolio? If you look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's a bodybuilder, and you know, at his prime, he is like 240 pounds or something like that. If you look at Donald Trump, he's also the same weight. But let me ask you a question. If Arnold and Trump got into a ring and Arnold is at his prime, who's going to win a fight? You look at the two people, which one looks stronger? The same thing can happen with a portfolio. You can have two portfolios of the same size. Maybe one is smaller, but one of them can outperform the other. You're getting good passive income from this one over here, and the other one is sucking up all your cash flow and you can't sleep at night. So in order for you to go from this negative cash flow portfolio to a positive one, you need to pay close attention to the return on your equity. The third misconception is that borrowing more money is the only way for your growth. Now, it is very common for an investor, they buy the one, two, or three, then they run into a wall because the bank is saying no to them for more borrowing, and they will stop their journey there. They've got this idea of holding forever. They're just thinking about the capital gains on the portfolio size and no focus on return on equity. And they might blame everyone else for not being able to grow. And I wanted to share a concept with you that I learned from one of my favorite entrepreneurs that I follow. You guys, if you're in small business, probably know him as well, Alex Hormozi. He always talks about this concept of skill stacking when he first started his YouTube channel. The example he always gives is like a bookkeeper who earns $25 per hour. How can she or he go to $250 per hour? Not doing something new, but doing the same thing. And he talks about if you can stack bookkeeping skill with other skill sets, you can get to $250 an hour by putting all those skill sets together. Give you another example, a shoe shining business. Have you seen someone get rich from that? Well, if you're just shoe shining, trading time for hours, then it's going to be tough. But if you start picking up skill sets like, okay, can I hire another person? Can I learn about business strategy, such as maybe hiring part-times or learning how to build systems so that you can get a college kid to come in to do the shoe shining part-time and you can make the difference? Then later, maybe you learn how to franchise it. And then later you learn about marketing. Then by stacking all those skill sets, you can go from just trading your time for hour shoe shining to a global franchise shoe shining business with a subscription on the shoe shine for all these franchisees. In the same way, we can think about property. If you follow the channel for a while, one of the property investors that I look up to is Sam Zell, and he's a billionaire investor in America. And he started his first investments just like me and you, right, with very little capital, and he figured out how to buy this apartment where he rented out rooms. And he just focused on the same game, which is the property investing side. For someone to go from one property, an apartment, to a billionaire, you think about it, he's self-made, so how did he do it? He would have skill stacked things like different types of properties, learning about building a business, capital raise, deal structure, public relation, building a team, a lot of skill sets stacked up together to become a billion investor. Now, sometimes it's not easy for us to see what skill sets we need to stack on top of what we know. It's much easier for you to ask somebody that is ahead of you in the game and just ask for their suggestion, or just look up people who are way ahead of you and see what skill sets they have stacked to get to where they are. So coming back to just being able to borrow more money, what else do you need to learn? Where can you learn about raising capital with friends and family? How can you deep dive into finance so you know how that borrowing calculation works inside out? So to summarize, the first misconception is that we have to hold forever, but instead we should always explore opportunity costs. What other options do we have if we didn't hold on to what we have? Secondly, instead of focusing on the property numbers and the size of the portfolio, think about the metric that's going to drive success. And again, I've hinted to you, it's return on your equity, or another word is return on investments. And within that category, there might be other metrics that you can deep dive into. And thirdly, don't let the bank dictate your growth, because there are a lot of ways to move forward as long as you look for those answers. Now, transforming your portfolio to become passive income is not an overnight exercise, but certainly if you reimagine what you could do with your portfolio and start building a plan towards it, then you can take the steps towards it. If any of those mistakes or misconceptions resonate with you and you want to learn more, then I urge you to check out the Stage 3 Masterclass, where we talk about how you can get infinite servicing capacity from the bank, because we deep dive into how the financing calculation work for us to achieve it. What are the metrics that's going to allow us to go forward for that? Don't let your portfolio be a burden. And if you need to talk to someone, Mortgage HQ is here. Our advisors will do a strategy session absolutely free. And how we make money is that, hey, if you like the advice that we give you, we look after your mortgages moving forward. And you've got a companion that also invests in properties, and they can walk that journey with you. Thanks for tuning in to Leverage Addicts. I'm your host, Blandon. Until next time, I'll see you guys again.